tonight's episode of Side Stage with the IVGO, we welcome the orchestra's conductors.
Okay, well, some of us aren't educated, Robert.
Things go a little awry.
Oh, yeah, there's a clown here. I thought that was a coaster.
And of course, this happens.
One final thing I need you to do for me. I need you to whip out the buttons.
Join us tonight.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Side Stage with the IVGO. My name is Lisa. You will know me from the previous episodes. You will also know Robert McMartin.
Hello.
Keith Milligan.
Hello to both cameras.
To both cameras. And now for somebody you are yet to meet, but who is very important to the orchestra, our special guest, David Bennington.
I feel like you stressed very important there.
I did.
It's just making
but,
me feel special.
But not in the good way.
Every single person on this podcast is a VIP, okay?
Oh, well, I appreciate that. It's great to be here.
And why is that, Lisa?
Because every person, aside from me, on this podcast episode is a conductor of the IVGO.
Ooh.
Good segue, Robert, by the way.
Thanks. I try.
So, we're going to try and rattle through this episode, see what information we can share with you all. But I think there's a very important question to start off with. And I think that question is, how the hell did you all get into conducting? And I would quite like to start with our musical director. So, Robert, let's start with you, buddy.
Oh, Lord. Okay.
I think we dodged a bullet there.
I've got the longest story out of all of us.
That's why I came to you first.
Yeah, that's fair.
Size doesn't matter.
So let's see. It all started...
Keith, it's too early for this. Sorry, Robert. Go ahead, Mitch.
I missed that, and we're just going to let it go.
You'll hear it in the actual edits.
So excited. Okay, so let's see. It starts all back in high school, which I forget what the Northern Irish equivalent of that is.
I believe it's also
pretty
high school.
Pretty much is just high school.
Is it still high school for you people?
For us, it would be senior school in a way.
It's American high school, but with a lot less drama.
Yeah.
You say that, but still. I've heard stories.
Couldn't make TV out of Methody, like.
Yeah, so back in high school, so the band program was very important in our school. We had one of the largest marching bands back in Maryland. I think we had something like 180 members, which for high school is just massive.
Wow.
And we weren't really a parade kind of band. We did a lot of, in the States, marching bands do a lot of field shows, which are like the halftime shows during football games, American football, hand egg, if you will. And there's always a conductor, drum major dude who's kind of like at the front keeping time. And seeing my brother in the band while I was in middle school, so when I was probably like 12 or 13, I'm watching the band and I'm like, yeah, I think I'll do that. And basically all through high school worked my way up to being the conductor for that group. And then after 2 years of doing that in high school, when I went to college, when I did my undergrad, I learned how to actually conduct. Because conducting and being a drum major are two very different things.
Yeah.
And then from college, ended up starting an orchestra to get more experience. And then went to grad school and started the IVGO to get more experience and to do other fun stuff.
I gotta say, like, the only person who could pull that off is probably you, Robert. It's just like, I need more experience. I know, I'm gonna start my own orchestra, not like approach other orchestras.
But you know, you'd actually be surprised. It's actually a very common thing to do.
It really isn't.
Among conductors,
probably in America, but not here.
Among conductors who need more experience or want to break into that field, they'll start their own ensembles. That's the best way to do it.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, well, because you're not going to let somebody who doesn't know anything to stand in front of a professional orchestra. It doesn't work.
But what about Keith?
They just...
Ha-ha! Hilarious.
I jest. I just had to get the first dig in because I know I'm going to be slaughtered later.
We're not quite professional now, are we?
Don't worry, David, you're not Adam. Adam gets a lot of abuse on this podcast because he's never here.
Oh, Adam. And then, so from the IVGO, ended up doing, well, not ended up doing, pursued a master's degree in conducting. Because undergrad degrees in conducting don't exist except for like two schools in the States. And even then, I highly recommend that you don't do them.
I was going to ask that question because I've never seen a course ever that's just like, this is a course about conducting. And I never thought it was that hard a job. I'm really sorry. You
know what I mean? But it's like, amazing I understood how much easier it was. It looks then.
If you're good, it makes it look easy, or you make it look easy.
Yeah.
And then the results, and it's just sweat buckets every time. But I do it anyway.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, but it does. Also, it looks. I mean, on the face of it, it does look like you're just waving a stick and being like and shouting at the second violins and the violas.
Oh, the violas.
It's always the violas.
Violas deserve what they get. And
because I made that comment, I think Robert will make sure it is always the violas from here on out.
Yeah, basically. Congratulations.
Yep. I snookered myself.
You've just screwed yourself for the next 2 years.
Yep. By the way, guys, I'm leaving IVGO tonight. No,
oh, please
no,
don't.
I would never do that. I would never. But yes, so explain to me what happens in a master's in conducting.
Oh, Lord. So
very briefly, if possible.
Yeah, so the biggest thing beyond the actual like work that you have to do behind it, the biggest thing is that you're basically the assistant conductor for whatever ensembles that you're covering. So you're shadowing the ensemble's conductor.
Mm-hmm.
You're covering for them when they're not there. They're also your private teacher. So you do take conducting lessons like you would piano lessons, to learn proper form. And, a lot of it is physicality, but a lot of it is also, you know, we're going to sit here and we're going to score study for an hour and talk about this piece and like figure out what's going on and what you're going to do, how you're going to do this. How are you going to convey this information in a sight reading session? So really when you go back to do your master's work, you're really paying to be put in front of a very good ensemble for 2 years is essentially the idea.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Beyond that, I mean, there's some coursework, there's a lot of studying, but, yeah, most of it is to
what
get that, like, in-person, on-the-stand experience.
David and or Keith, did you have an experience like that with getting into conducting yourselves? Was it quite straightforward like that? Like moving through like conducting kind of thing.
I mean, we've been listening to Robert give off this amazing story of how he's actually been educated properly, and we've been looking like side eye at each other, being like,
"Yeah." I mean, we're saying like it makes it if you're a good conductor, it makes it look like you just wave your arms. I think both of us essentially were just taught, okay, here's how you wave your arms.
Oh, you were taught? Wow. I wasn't actually taught until like legit 6 months after I started.
To be fair, I think the only thing I was taught was you put your hand this way instead of this way for the outbeat. I don't know. I can't remember.
The upbeat's up.
Whatever. 1, 2, 3.
For all the audio listeners, Keith is waving his hand backward, forwards, left or right.
Yeah, this is a podcast, isn't it? Oh.
It's already off to a bad start.
I mean, I got into it because Robert abandoned us.
Hold up. I got kicked out of the country.
You did not get kicked out. We would never ask somebody as magnificent as you to leave.
I was not. Okay, I wasn't kicked out. I was not permitted to stay. I did not abandon you.
Anyway.
This is why, what was it, episode 2 or episode 3, you were really trying to get a marriage proposal from somebody who lived in the UK.
I mean, I think he
still
is.
Pretty sure that was you, Lisa.
I'm not naming names.
It's still cheaper than a PhD. Anyway.
True.
So, I think I maybe started with the IVGO.
I wasn't there whenever it started, so I don't know why you're asking me.
No, I mean, conducting-wise, I think you were there whenever I started conducting.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
I think you might have been. Was that in the top of the wee room? Were you there for that?
Yeah, for like a bit.
20 flights of stairs.
Yeah, that was
Yeah, so you would have been there, pardon me.
Pardon.
Whenever I conducted properly, for the first time ever. And it was really because we didn't have enough people to do it. And I was right, okay, how are we going to keep the orchestra alive? And I was like, give it a go. Sure, how hard can it be? And I seriously thought, how hard can it be?
Famous last words.
It kind of is, because of, yeah.
Yeah. Although, so much going through your head at any one time.
It's an incredible amount of fun, though. Like, it's I wouldn't want to say it's more fun than being a trumpet player, because you have to be a lot more sober.
Do you?
usually, there's sort of a minimum beer level to play the trumpet.
Mm.
There's probably a maximum beer level to be able to walk on stage and not trip over everything.
That's true.
To get to the very front.
Fun fact about drunk conducting. For our fans listening, go back and watch if we have video footage of it. The Sonic thing from QCon a couple of years ago.
Oh God!
Please don't. I think we're going to cut that.
Yeah, we're probably going to cut that.
Robert's face is going to explode.
Robert has his face in his hands.
You what?
Yeah.
I sent that video to QCon to use for their Twitch thing.
Oh God!
That's amazing. Was that the same day
that Holly was like completely flat out?
Yeah, that was the one
on her back.
Okay, we're definitely cutting this then.
No, this
welcome
is
to Ivy Geo After Dark.
Yeah, that was surprising. you know what? Fair
that
play.
That was a fun show.
I don't think she'll do that again.
Granted, she had just turned 18. Like, that was
she should have been used to it by then.
That was her deal.
I'm the one who should have known better.
Yeah, why didn't you know better? How dare you?
Because it was
I think Keith chooses not to know better.
Granted, that was also the same show that Brian and Pete came back late during intermission from the parlor.
Brian being same my show. Father.
Yes.
Father Brian.
That was
Father Brian. Can
show.
We start calling him Father Brian?
I think we'll have to at this stage.
Oh, that would be brilliant. Father Brian. He'd hate that. He would hate that.
So what I so far learnt is that to conduct, you either need a master's degree or you need to get drunk.
That's about the same, yeah.
So I think we need a little bit more clarification here on what actually goes into conducting an orchestra, whether it be a big orchestra or a small orchestra. What does a conductor actually do?
Waves their arms and prays.
I mean, the responsibility for the orchestra, for the conductor, sorry, not the orchestra, geez. The orchestra is going to make a great show. The responsibility of a conductor, from how I see it, is you are in charge of making damn sure everyone plays the right notes, the right way, at the right time.
Exactly.
And you look good when you're doing it.
Oh, of course.
You got to have a great ass.
That's the main thing.
Hope it works. I think it's like 98% hope.
It might be 98% hope in practice, but like by the time you get to actually performing, you don't hope anymore. Like you know what people are going to do. You know what to be worried about, and you know who to look at, and who is going to need maybe a little bit of help to make sure that they know where they are.
Like the viola section.
Like the viola section.
Well,
to be fair, I actually was going to say, i.e., the viola section when we were doing the Spider-Man piece a while ago.
Oh yeah.
And we did not have a clue, and I think both you, Keith and David, both tried conducting that one, and I just remember going, see, whenever that comes up, look at me, please, because I need help.
That's actually quite a good segue into, pardon me again, geez, about how we have to prepare and know the score and every part.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For that, you know, a normal person who's playing an instrument, they know roughly what's going on in other sections, but like the part they know is their own.
Yeah, that's the only thing they really see. Like, they know everything else just by ear more than anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. As a player, you listen for basically the lead-in to your next section of playing, or who's playing with you, and who am I supposed to be in tune with if there's harmonies and stuff going on. But like the actual running of people's scores or the music in front of them, I wouldn't have a clue.
Yeah, so if you look certainly at any of the scores that I've marked, and I know Robert does exactly the same because I copied it from him, there is... an artist's impression of colouring pencil all over the thing for what's happening, because you can't physically read every instrument, every line for every instrument and every bar and be able to count and know exactly when everything's coming in. Because, I mean, that's impossible. I've only got one brain.
Speak for yourself.
Okay, well, some of us aren't educated, Robert.
Not not even just educated in conducting, just educated in general.
Yeah, what?
I mean, you've met David, like, what do you expect?
Oh, Keith, you're sitting across from him. He could actually throw something at
He's
you if he wanted
you
to.
He's giving you wine. What's wrong with
I
you?
I brought my own wine.
He did bring his own wine.
We're... I also brought mother's shortbread. I don't know if you saw.
Oh, your mother's shortbread? Your mother's shortbread?
Oh, yes.
I may have a bite at your mother's biscuit later.
Oh, please do. I'm sure she'd enjoy.
So, Robert, she's this is the point that we both say. We're not allowed to have David and Keith in the same room ever again.
This is what happens at concerts, too. Like, this is nothing new.
Anyway, segue back.
Let's come back to it.
I kind of forget how we got into the fact that I scribble like a toddler over all the scores. In different colours, meaning different things. But I do.
But as you say, it's like, if it was me, the idea is like you're highlighting who has the main line at this point and who has either a counterpoint melody or something that's really atmospheric underneath it. If it was me, I'd be like out with highlighters, like going, look at this person here, highlight that part of the score. If it was me in my no knowledge area of conducting, trying to work it out.
I have never thought of using highlighters.
That would
it's not great.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well,
the educated one has spoken.
Yeah, the king has spoken.
Do you think, like, orchestras, it must be the same for big orchestras, not just ours? You're like, we do it in colouring pencil. Like, obviously, like, maybe not everyone does it in colouring pencil, but there has to be big orchestras, big conductors who have to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm. I should probably ask the guy I know. And I'm going to try not naming names, but there's a guy I know who orchestrates for large orchestras and records in Abbey Road. So I should probably ask him and see what he does.
Yes, please.
Very mysterious.
Well, I don't want to name drop in case he gets annoyed that I haven't spoken to him in a number of years.
Just talking to him for tips.
Yeah, that's like,
all,
hey,
that's all he is to you now, just a walking.
Hey, Mr. X, how do you do that?
But Robert, is that maybe why it's good that you may disagree with me here, but do you think it's good that it's not always you standing in front of us, that Keith and David both come in and conduct in different pieces, that it changes the sound for the orchestra?
He's like, I wish it was only me. I wish it was just me all the time. I know you.
Yeah, sure.
Sure. Very convincing.
Well, I was going to say, I think it really depends. Having a new set of ears on the piece is always a good thing because people are going to hear other things. Like, David will know for sure when the brass are screwing up or doing great.
You may just highlight the whole line.
Yeah, Keith will... Keith will keep an eye on the wind players. Like, conductors will always, especially the not big conductors. Conductors will always like fall back on what they know, and so whatever instrument that they started playing, that's the one that's going to get the most attention during a rehearsal.
Mm-hmm. That's why I always say I don't think I could conduct, and I, even when I'm trying to arrange pieces, I have to be like, I know that part isn't in the viola, so I have to put it somewhere else.
Yeah,
trying to be careful, because you do tend, I would lean on strings because I know how strings and string sectionals work.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be clueless about, I could do the basics of a wind or a brass sectional, but I'd be clueless.
Oh, it's really easy, just give the most gorgeous melody to the French horns and you'll be fine.
Pretty much, yeah.
All the many French horns that we have.
You heard the theme for this podcast. Like, that's exactly what I did.
If you want stormtroopers, it's the trombones. If you want shock and awe, it's the trumpets. If you want something lovely, it's the French horns. And brass.
Just, that's all you need for an orchestra. Just brass.
I know, again, I'm not going to name drop, but they will know who they are if they're listening to this. I actually know two French horn players who are... they're in a relationship and living together, and one of them is baritone horn and the other one's tenor, and they're just constantly like, send us jet pieces, like, we want to play. Like,
and why haven't they joined the orchestra yet?
Where are they?
Yeah, why haven't they joined yet?
Because they're in like every other orchestra in the world.
Like, that's an excuse.
So we need ringers. I'm okay with that.
I have tried. But they're just never available to come to shows because I did ask them. Remember for this goes to show how bad my memory is. In November when we played
Low
in
Church.
The church, yeah, that's the one. For Extra Life, I asked them to come and play at that, but neither of them were free. So I have been trying, but anyway. Back to topic.
Right.
Keep things moving, guys. We're keeping things moving. So, in terms of actually, like, we know here's what goes into it. Now it's, you're not just standing in front of us waving your arms. What is the most difficult part of conducting? It might be the best way for me to ask that question.
Ooh. Keith, you've been very quiet. I think it's your turn to bestow upon us some wisdom. And also, I want to know what makes you awkward.
I mean, this is the hardest question, because I mean, it depends on the person who's
Robert's
doing the conducting.
Robert's currently looking at his screen with a face, waiting to hear what this response is.
Oh dear!
Because I'm gonna take this and turn it around on him next time he has a lesson with me. Which, by the way, you were supposed to have a lesson with me last summer, and you didn't, jerk. All right, David got
the teacher, and Robert is coming out.
I did, and that lesson was incredibly helpful.
Ooh.
Yo,
that's you at his butthole.
Teacher's head at the other end of the table. Okay. Anyway.
So Keith, what's the most difficult part about conducting?
I mean, it does, to be fair, I think, depend on the person doing the conducting. Like, someone may find time signatures that are not normal difficult. So, like, you know, the normal ones being the 4-4, the 3-4, something like that. Mm-hmm. Whereas something like in the Witcher piece that we started playing and then had to stop because the plague happened, that was at the very start of that piece. There was a whole thing of goodness. That, which was 5-4-6-4 alternating bars. Which, David's is looking very scared.
It's more than four?
Yeah. So, I mean, that type of thing, to be fair, like, that's... If it's hard for the conductor, it's hard for the players and that type of thing anyway.
I'm pretty sure we had an arrangement of that piece that was also in... It had the main melody in, like, 7-4.
We probably did.
I was like, that melody's in 4-4. And I was like, why do we make this so complicated on ourselves?
Because
like,
it's you can Adam.
Hear it. True. Sorry, Adam.
I think we should maybe ask Adam to conduct for a week, just... One of his awkward time things.
Can I be there for that? That's our welcome back treat to ourselves.
It's like happy Christmas, Keith and David. Love the IVGO.
Yeah.
I'm so glad.
That's not fair. That's not fair, but I do want to see it.
I mean, it's not fair, but it's funny, so we're doing it.
Yeah.
So you find the technical stuff harder?
Yeah, I mean, it's also a sort of... you have to know... when to stop banging on about a certain bit, I think.
Oh god, yeah.
Like, because you could, I mean, realistically, if there's one bar that's going terribly in a piece, you could spend all night in that. But if it's like, say that bar is only, as it usually is, it's only in the violas and they're the ones messing up.
Wow.
Keith, I'm the editor. Be careful.
You say this every week, but it's not going to happen.
I start stringing words. I start, but here's what's going to start happening. I'm going to start listening through your entire audio file, start stringing words together, and you're going to get, I am a huge dick, and all these varying pitches.
I mean, we've already talked about my mother's biscuit. I think I've suffered enough already in this podcast.
Back to the topic.
I mean, that's a very valid point, actually.
My mother's biscuit?
No, geez, the people aspect of conducting, which is completely nothing to do with conducting at all.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in a situation as a player where there was, in this concert band I'm in, there was a part where I think the saxophones weren't doing well.
Typical.
Yeah. and the conductor at the time basically spent the entire sort of post-break of the rehearsal just focusing on their section, so the rest of us were just sitting there with our instruments like, yep, anytime. So like, it's a case of you have to recognize whenever something isn't going to get any better in a rehearsal and you sort of send it away for them to practice, which I mean is
what?
Yeah, well, that's an issue in and of itself, but we're not going to get into that one.
Mm-hmm.
Funny you say that, because I'll tell you a story, and I am going to say what orchestra this was in, so anybody who's listening who knows, they know who this conductor is, but screw it. When I was in CBYO...
I was
going to
say, is this the CBYO?
Who was conducting when you were there?
Paul McBride.
Oh, I've heard stories.
But see, he was also the principal of my school at the time, and it was him who actually asked me to join the orchestra because they needed more violas to play Rachman and not second. And I mean, it was the best experience joining that year, but it was the next year and we were playing Vltava. And there's a lot of that that's quite hard for the violas. And I was the oldest, and there was another guy who was really, really good, and a few people who were like sort of the same level playing as I would be. You can make of that what you will. And then there was a lot of younger ones. So I was like the mummy of the section, and he made us stand up in twos and play like these six bars until we got it right.
I remember doing that.
And it was so awful. And I like it got worse and worse because people get more nervous and more frustrated because they know I just need to go and practice it. And you're making me feel bad about it. And I remember going up at the end of the rehearsal and just being like, listen here.
Is that a wee rant? Oh, you didn't, did you? Like, wow.
Oh, I did.
Oh,
I did.
Good for you.
That's never going to help. And the next week when I went back, I got an apology. So
I've never seen Angry Lisa before, but I think she would be very scary.
It takes a lot. It takes a lot.
I was probably in the concert band at the same time that you were in the youth orchestra.
Oh, that was about 5-6 years ago.
Oh, okay. No, this is longer.
You're so old.
No, but seven
years ago, actually. About 7 years ago.
Yeah, I was going to say, David, you're the old one here.
What year is it? 2020?
For once, it's not me.
Okay, no, a bit more than that.
Yeah, 7 years ago. I think it was 2013.
My fun fact that always really just I use to remind David about his age is that he left Grosvenor whenever I started.
Wow.
Which is
thanks,
just,
thanks,
yeah,
Keith.
You're very welcome.
It means,
Keith, that he has more time and experience of conducting than you do. So maybe you should tell
that's actually incorrect. Because, Keith, you conduct other groups as well, don't you?
Yeah, I have.
David, you could have just accepted that.
No, you gotta give the dues.
Anyway. In terms of that question, though, because I'm going to keep coming back around.
Yeah.
In terms of it being quite, like, I would find it quite mentally taxing to conduct because if, as you say, there's bits that just maybe aren't going to go right or problems that are going to happen. Do you ever just go, is there a point in me standing here?
Some weeks.
Every time that I have thought, is there a point in me standing here? I have made damn sure that all of you know that I am thinking, is there a point of me standing here?
That's what I was about to say. Yeah, I also find it mentally taxing when David conducts.
Because I demand so much of you.
You really do.
I know what you're capable of.
Okay.
I'm just going to say, I'm enjoying just watching this whole thing go by right now.
We should make a spin-off podcast, just us.
I'm kind of sad because I kind of wish I was there now. It's like, I just wish we could all be in a room doing this podcast because the actual back and forth between two people sitting across the table is hilarious.
We can look at arranging something at a larger space. I have enough equipment that we could make it work.
I'm in LA, you dick.
Well, apart from you. what was I going to say? What were you talking about? I forgot.
How mentally taxing it is.
Oh, yeah. Right. Let's cycle back to that then.
The crux of the question.
I think it's fair to say that how things that are difficult in rehearsals are very, very different to things that are difficult at performance time.
Yeah.
Like rehearsal time, you have to worry an awful lot about people's feelings. And performance time, you have to worry an awful lot about results. And that's it. Yeah, it's like for break rehearsal time, I find it's all about the instrumentalists themselves, and like performance time, it's like, oh, please God, make sure I get this 3-4 in the right place.
Fair.
Oh, there's a funny story.
Oh, dear.
There was this one time when I definitely hadn't had a few pints of Guinness. we were doing a show in, I definitely hadn't, we were doing a show in the Black Box.
Oh, yes.
It was a small group.
Was this after the... string quintet did the Star Wars and you
yeah
went
so I went off stage not to the bar for a while and we came back up and it was it Whiterun?
I think so, yeah.
That's on. Yeah, I mean, I can remember what we did, so that's pretty good. I started conducting in the wrong time signature.
Oh my god.
I remember that.
I know.
Was that the one you had to like, for like, oh, and no. Then people started playing, or kept on playing, like,
it was like, it was sort of hanging together, but everyone was going, what the, nobody knew what was happening. I didn't know what was happening. I realized, like,
I maybe think you managed to cover it well.
10 bars in or something, and I was like, okay, oh right, oh dear.
I think, like, from the audience perspective, you were able to go, stop, from the K.
Yeah, it's like, it's, I mean, and this is sort of whenever you're doing like, so like doing band performances and stuff, it's kind of the same. It's like, if you start wrong, you have a choice. The choice is, do we stop and we say, oh dear, sorry about that, folks, oops,
yeah,
and start again properly, or is it actually recoverable? And 99% of the time it's not recoverable, because you just got to be like, you know what, this is gone, nobody knows where we are, and you got to, I mean, it's embarrassing, but it's the only same way, otherwise you look stupid.
I know that happened to me on stage whenever we were doing the, whichever gig that was, you in the big circus tent.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that one.
That was a great gig.
That was very good. But we were doing God of War.
Eastside Arts Festival,
that's
guys.
That's the one.
That's, yep.
That was also only just last year, guys.
Yeah. It feels like a
lifetime
ago.
And we did
ago.
A podcast episode on it, Keith.
Okay. Have I been drinking for the rest of these?
I'm just calling you out.
There's a bottle of Cabernet Sauvignon over there that I think I'm going to have to have a look at.
Oh, we said that very French. Cabernet Sauvignon.
Focus, people.
But anyway, that's, you know what? Since we've done that episode, I've probably already told this, but you know what? I'm just going to start repeating myself now. We were doing God of War, and we got to the end of it, where it's the epilogue part, where it goes fast, and people just started messing up. Definitely wasn't my fault. Actually, I didn't think it was, but whatever.
You wrote the piece. It's always your fault.
I'm going to hold my hand up and say that could have been our fault. I'll be honest.
I mean, Viola, so yeah. But that was one where I just had to sort of stop, turn around to the audience and say, right, lads, that obviously wasn't supposed to happen. They all clapped, so, you know, I felt pretty good about that. And then we had to start again, and it almost messed up again. But that was like the 1% of times whenever it was actually was recoverable.
Yeah, and it does happen.
Oh yeah,
and especially when you're working as well, when you're working with non-professional musicians.
Yeah,
you know, with the non-professional conductors. Sorry, Robert, I'm excluding you from this, obviously. You know, things are going to go wrong, and it's just a shame that whenever it goes wrong for you, it's a hell of a lot more visible and much more impactful than if something if I'm playing the trumpet, for example, and, you know, I miss an entry or if, you know, I fluff a note or I fall off somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, realistically, you've got another trumpet to back you up if you do miss something. But if like,
well,
one
that's
of
what
us...
I was going to say. It's like the only time I think as a player you ever worry about something like that is when you're mic'd. Individually,
yeah.
Like the likes of Stendhal, where the front desks of the strings are mic'd, that's when you worry, because you're like, oh god, I know I can't play this bar right, and I know the conductor's gonna look at me when it happens, and yeah. It's gonna be a problem.
I mean, that's
see,
mental.
Here's the
time.
Thing, though. The most musicians, or like you say, like, oh, the conductor's gonna look at me. That the problem with the position of the conductor is that you don't have just like one person, like, you know. At you. You have an entire hall behind you. You are ultimately responsible for everything that happens. And I think it's that is the weight that just kind of like crushes a soul. So it's like, it's so
wow, you take
wrong,
this personally?
Yeah. I mean, it's just my profession, you know, no big deal.
Hello, soul crushers.
So it's like, no matter what happens, they're not going to be like, oh, the violas are shit. No, they're going to be like, wow, that was bad. The conductor must suck. Like,
see, I would never think of it like that,
but you see, that's usually how it goes down. Because it's the conductor who is ultimately responsible for the group.
Yeah.
And also, you also have then the entire orchestra staring at you as well. So, I mean, like, it's not just the eyes going from through the back of your head, it's also all the ones looking straight at your face as well.
I don't know, I kind of enjoy that. I find that's quite like,
it's empowering.
It's like we're a team, lads, and you look around and, you know, it's the one time whenever everyone's actually going to look at you.
Yeah.
is just before they start playing in a gig, and then like then all bets are off.
Oh yeah, like you do the downbeat and everyone just goes, just see the top of their heads for the rest of the
it's head down. I try not to do that because I got that beat out of me by Nikki Johnston when I was in school.
Oh, here's another wee name like, drop.
Look at me. The one thing I will say, she actually put us all in a chamber orchestra, and it was like junior, intermediate, senior. I was in all of them. And for one of them, now I can't remember what the piece was. You know what it actually was? It was Eine Kleine. This is a different story than the one I told previously where we sang our parts instead of actually playing because we thought it'd be funny in the middle of a concert.
I just want to hold on. While you're still talking, I'm just going to say the boys are grabbing another bottle of wine. Oh, I'm sorry. It's a box of wine. It's not a bottle. It's a box.
It's man-sized.
Very, very classy. This is what I get for not actually looking at the screen when I'm talking because I talk my hands and all sorts.
We all love David's box anyway. In this house.
Yeah.
I'm moving on. We were in, it was doing Eine Kleine and we knew it really, really well at this point. And she was like, see this concert that you're playing in the Ulster Hall? I'm not going to conduct you for it. You're just going to do it. And we all panicked because we'd never played without a conductor before. But there's so many chamber orchestras that do that, that kind of make it seem like you don't always need a conductor.
Oh, so this is something I hoped like, we would get into.
But I always thought in my own head, it's like somebody has to be there while the rehearsals are happening before they get to the stage of no conductor.
I want to hear what David says first, because I have my opinion, because this will also go into what a conductor actually does, as is listed on our plan. Yep. And I have a
there's a plan here. I thought that was a coaster.
Okay. I have a lovely rant written in, so I'm going to let you guys see that. Go first.
No, my point is a little bit different. I'm thinking a little bit more of the physics of, the physics of acoustics or the acoustics of performing as a group on a stage. For a chamber group, which you got, four or five people? Or it's like string quartet, quintet, in a small brass group. You're physically closer together when you're performing like that. And usually you're sort of semicircular enough that you're always, everyone's visible to everybody else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So by the time, if you're playing along, I mean, you're able to visually, first of all, you're able to visually interpret the clues from whoever is leading. And there will always be somebody who's leading a performance in a group or whatever. Even if that person switches at any one time, there is one person who is going to assert musical dominance somehow through body language or through them being the people who are keeping time, or they're trying to queue up two people who have to come in at the same time or anything. There'll always be somebody in charge. And that can work for a small group. And then by the time somebody's played a note, even if you're not looking, by the time they play and it reaches the ears of another person and they play based off that, the sounds are roughly in sync. And so it can kind of work, and things don't tend to slow down. Whenever you're playing with a larger group and they're spread over a physically larger area, the role of the conductor becomes so much more important, because the latency from the sound reaching one side of the orchestra to the other, for somebody who can't see the person who made the sound, who is relying on that, to think that they're in time, if they're 20 meters, maybe we'd say apart, by the time they hear that noise and start playing their note, the sound from the first instrumentalist is already 20 meters out into the audience. Well, 20 meters, 20 meters, yeah, it'll be the same. Yeah, I'm trying not to confuse time and distance here. I swear I know what I'm talking about. I have a degree. So what tends to happen with large groups that are spaced out, not necessarily even larger groups, but groups that are spaced out, is over time they're going to get slower and slower and slower, because they're trying to play in time with, subconsciously they're going to try and play in time with each other with what they hear, because music is acoustic. You hear music. So even in times when you know better, you don't know how much earlier to play a note.
Yeah.
Unless you're really, really good. And really, really good people can do this. But you have a conductor who's...
His finger up.
He does, but I don't want to... I want to finish first, because then he can speak with all of...
Don't want to let Robert finger you.
It's just in case I've said something wrong now. I want to make sure to get it all out. Either dig myself out of the hole or into it properly. It's going to be one of the two. You have a conductor who's a central visual point, and like light, basically over the course of... The distances involved in musical performance is basically like immediate. if there is the trust and the confidence in the trust in the conductor and the confidence of the player to play with the trust of the conductor to say no, no matter what they hear, the conductor sort of able to hear everything as it's going out and is going to know when things are in sync and when things aren't, and are able to say, you need to hurry up, or you need to, geez, would you please slow down? And that it can sort of tie a physically separate group together, which is like super important. And the bigger the stage, this is why a tech rehearsal is so important at a venue you're playing at with the same conductor. So the conductor can hear how big the hall is, how much they have to, are going to have to try and wrangle an orchestra. And the orchestra knows just how out of sync they're going to think they sound with other instruments in that particular space, because performance is inherently tied to the space. Oh, I was
happy about that.
I am pleased, and I'm about to be shredded.
Take another wee glass of wine. I think you deserve it.
So hit me with it. What was wrong about that?
So here's the thing. Even no matter how small the group is, sound will be late, even in a quartet, even in a string quartet. In chamber groups, they aren't going off of what they hear, they go off of what they see. So it's not the fact that they're listening. I mean, obviously they're listening, because you always have to listen. You have to listen to be in tune. You have to listen to create a blend in your section.
Absolutely.
But in chamber groups, you're not listening for time. You're watching the first violin.
Yeah.
You're watching the leader, because that's their job. So they're a chamber ensemble, so they're massive, like massive chamber orchestras that have, you know, they're bigger than the IVGO.
That's what I was going to say.
David
was saying about them being smaller. Like, the chamber orchestras I were in were like 6 first violins, 6 seconds, 3 violas, 6 cellos. They were bigger, and you needed a conductor in front of that. But we all knew to watch each other for who had the tune.
Right. So it's always the first violin is going to be the person who leads, like first chair violin. That's why they're in the front.
That's so funny, because that's complete opposite of playing with a band. It's like the guy at the back is in charge.
Yeah. Right, because in a band, you're not watching, you're not looking for visual. In a band, you're listening back, because that is all audio related. Like, that's why in like wind bands, when you tune, like the whole idea behind, so my professor at Cal State wrote a book on wind band tuning recently. Like, that was a sabbatical while I was there my first semester. And his whole theory is that you tune to the lowest instrument in the back who has the melody. That is who you listen to. And it's because of the way that it's the way that sound works and pushes forward. But by listening back, wait, was it back or forward? No, wait, hold on.
While you're thinking, I was actually talking about guitar bands
I
definitely also play in.
Right, no, I'm aware.
It's the drummer. The drummer is like, even if he can't even stand up, which is like fairly common with drummers, like you have to follow his beat.
Yeah.
It's the same concept, though. It really is. Playing in ensemble is the same concept all the way across. Chamber orchestras, you follow your first violin. They're the one who's going to be cueing you in at the beginning of the piece. They're the ones who set the tempo. And even in when they're rehearsing, you know, it's your section leaders who take the brunt of the work at that point when there isn't a conductor. Now, you discuss the physical role of a conductor very well. So good on you, David.
It's a compliment. Well, I like it. I would like some more of those.
He's learned from his lessons.
Take a sip of wine.
You've learned a bit.
I think I need to reward myself here.
Victory sip.
Oh my God, Keith, how full is that glass? Yeah,
no, Robert, you missed
that. I wanted
that.
To finish it.
Busy talking. Oh, wow. He poured all. I really hope that the microphone picked up the pour sound, because that's going in silence at the end. Because I was watching it going, that's not going to fit.
Somebody's taking the glider home.
No, mother comes to collect me.
You're going to ride your mother home?
Oh my God. Oh, she listens to this. I'm so sorry.
David.
Oh, so am I. No, that's not actually fair. I have met both of Keith's parents, and they are the most wonderful people, and Oh, I feel awful now.
No, see,
I mean, it's such a good Northern Ireland joke.
Anytime.
No, you don't understand. This is the running joke of the entire podcast. There are only listeners.
So, for context for the listeners, this is the first one we're recording after the first episode actually came out, and they were sitting listening to the to the first episode, and were pretty complimentary for to the parents then. Oh, have you not listened to it, David? Because you're looking very shocked.
I haven't listened to the whole thing. Okay, so I quit my job last week and I've had a lot of work to do.
But yeah, okay. We were very complimentary to them, and it's just sort of gone downhill ever since. So I'm hoping they
just like this conversation.
Yeah.
Yes, Robert, bring us back to topic, please.
It's like we have a time limit, guys, and I'm trying to be good about this. Otherwise, Lisa's going to fly to LA and kick my ass. right. So, conductors. Right. What do we do? What do we actually do? Yeah. Okay.
Good question.
So, the whole idea behind having a conductor is that it's not like, yes, we keep time. Yes, we rehearse people. But really, like, the whole idea is it's our musical interpretation that gets played. We are the... I can never find a good word for this, but we are like the not the patron, but like the guardian of the score of the composition that we're playing. And it's our job to interpret it and make our interpretation happen in front of us. Right? So When you're watching an orchestra and you're watching a conductor, you're like, oh, that looks easy. That's because that's 5% of what we do is the concert.
Oh, very much like, so. I say it's such a small part.
And rehearsals are probably only about 50% on top of that. All of our work is really the studying and the score work that we do before we even get into a rehearsal hall. And I will say I'm really bad at that part. Only because at one point I was doing a concert almost every week, and so to find time to go study before getting into a rehearsal, before going into a show and trying to like keep, you know, I had a folder that was probably about I'd say about 3 inches thick of scores that I was working on the time, trying to keep all of this between 4 ensembles, 5 ensembles, something ridiculous. And trying to keep everything going and, like, you know, all of that at the same time. I'm seeing Keith react, and I'm sure he made a thick joke.
No, that was David looking at me, and we both were connected for just a split second, and we both knew. We both knew.
It was not a thick joke.
You're both gross. But yeah, so it's like, that's our job. Our job is to... the best way I've been told is, and there was a Emer Noon, who we all know and love, had a great analogy for it, and now I can't remember the whole thing.
I've got a better one.
It's kind of like, what?
If you've ever listened to a tune and thought, God, that needs more cowbell, as a conductor, you can make that happen.
You didn't even let Robert get his out, though.
He was giving him time while he remembered it.
I think the wine's been taking a hold now.
Just gonna take a knife and twist it. So it's kind of like in olden times when you used to have to light candles for light. We are the candle, but then the orchestra is that mirror that you put behind it to really like so that the candlelight will bounce off of and go out into the room.
Yeah.
That's the best analogy I've heard so far of what we do.
I do like that. I like that a lot. Here's one thing I'm going to ask you.
Go on.
It's going to sound a little bit stupid, but...
I mean, you're a viola player, so we're used to it.
How's that any different?
Oh my goodness. Viola jokes, I guess, I'd say.
Ooh, take his. This was much better.
Thank you very much. That's what she says, maybe?
Oh, God.
Anyway, the question I'm going to ask is, is there a way... well, obviously, Robert, you do a master's in this, but is there a way to practice conducting?
Yes, yes there is. And I want to hear what Keith does.
I stand either in front of a mirror or in front of like some recording, a camera, that's the word, and either basically watch myself conduct the music going on in the earphones, and then I watch it back, and oh, Robert's making faces. I don't know what's happening right here.
Sorry, so I'm, as some people know on this recording, I'm in the middle of a PhD proposal, and I just had a fucking breakthrough. Give me a second.
we'll need to bleep that.
how does it feel to be Robert's muse?
No, we're allowed one per episode.
It's weird. But yeah, it's basically a case of I conduct through the piece to actually, get to know the piece, obviously. But then I watch back myself actually conducting, so I can actually know from a player's perspective if it's actually clear what I'm trying to put across to them. So if there's a bit in the trumpets, for example, I should look over to that direction so that I'm looking at the trumpets.
Okay.
But if I watch back the recording and at that specific part I'm still just head down like ooh, like that, for the audio listeners, I waved my hands a bit, then I know it's sort of I know to like look up and make sure to make eye contact with where the trumpets should be.
Yeah,
basically like you watch yourself do it so you know where to sort of focus on, I think is the right way to put it.
It does sound a little bit like, I'm sure to some people who are listening, it might sound a little bit silly to be doing, like, I look at myself in mirror.
Oh yeah, it is the weirdest thing.
Even as, like, when I'm performing, like, I'm working towards my diploma, so I'm, like, doing the back cello suite, and that's all solo. I'm thinking to myself, I have to have a stage presence, so I'm filming that every time I'm practicing and watching that back for, in terms of my actual stage performance, so I can understand from that aspect how that can help.
David, what do you do?
I'm keen to know how much of an emphasis you put on the actual physical performance from what the audience are going to be seeing.
That's a good way to dodge the question of how much practice.
I go back to it, but because I know personally, I come concert time, I am definitely a little bit more. I'm aware that there are people are watching me as much if not more than the actual orchestra.
Yeah,
and they're listening to the orchestra, but they're watching. Mm-hmm. Me?
No, so, I always find.
Yeah, you gotta put on a show.
If the conductor is fun to watch, I have more fun listening. Like there was. What was the one we organised the orchestra outing to? The Ulster Orchestra were playing, it was like movie stuff.
Oh,
it was on Halloween.
It was a Christmas
one.
Oh,
yeah.
It was on Halloween, I think, wasn't it?
We went to. No, it was a.
Anyway, the orchestra went on a thing to the Ulster Orchestra. And whoever was the conductor that night was just, like, certain pieces in particular, he was just, like, jumping around. He was obviously doing it just for show, rather than, for the actual orchestra's benefit. But it was, I don't know about you, I thought that was, like, really entertaining.
I can't remember his full name, but is that your fella Raphael?
No, it wasn't him, although he's good to watch as well.
He's a brilliant conductor, actually.
I know the name Christopher Bell is sort of ringing a bell, as it were.
That sounds kind of
funny.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure Chris Bell is a violinist.
True.
Not.
I have no idea.
No, that's Joshua Bell. No, I don't remember.
Anyway, in terms of like practicing that, obviously maybe your conducting style determines how you practice.
Yeah,
Would that be true?
I mean, okay, so. At some point, everybody who's listening needs to go watch Bernstein conduct the Overture to Candide.
Okay.
Because you will see a version of his conducting this so... it's raw is what it is, because that's who he was. but like there's parts of it that are just so, like, he gets big and he's dancing and he's having fun, but there's parts where he's just so reserved and just everything is right in on his chest. Like, there's no arm movement whatsoever. You can't see a thing, and you can't even see a downbeat, and that's fine. I mean, your style is going to change based off of who you're conducting and who you're working with. Amateur groups, and amateur is not a bad thing. Amateur means that we do it for the love of the music. It doesn't, like,
I mean, you're the one who's emphasizing that.
Yeah. Amateur means we don't get paid for it.
Right, but amateur also means you do it for the love of it. Like,
yeah,
I read something about this the other day, and I'm like, that is great. Yeah, you and me both, buddy.
Right. Final question for you all.
Wait, I wasn't done yet.
That's a shame.
Sorry! Yes, well, it's 3 minutes to an hour here, and...
Sit down. You can cut stuff out. It's fine.
No, but I don't like cutting things, because the flow of it is... There will be. I'll tell you how in a minute. Go on, Robert.
I was going to say...
This bit's definitely not being cut.
No.
I was going to say, with professionals, you don't have to keep a beat. They do it themselves. You get to shape the musical line rather than having to go, okay, here's one. Make sure you're down on one. Like, they're going to do it. So, the style changes with who you're about to step in front of. And so your practice changes based off of that as well. Okay, now you can continue on.
Sorry, Robert. I am so sorry for interrupting you. It will probably happen again in every single episode we ever do.
Not been a good night for the viewers.
You're going to get shit lines from me from now on.
I know, the viewers are just never getting anything ever again.
Whole notes. Just getting... Whole notes.
Or demi-semi quavers for the rest of time.
No, just your part, though. Just first chair violin.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to get this. Everyone else
For the normal parts, listeners, but whole notes you. Are not semi quavers. I forgot.
Breaves.
Demi-breaves? I completely forgot that word.
Oh, my goodness.
Hello, wine, Keith.
Oh.
Well, Keith just got demoted.
This is why we're getting to the end, before he drinks the end of that glass of wine and is lying on the floor.
Let him go.
He's so,
fine. We like to drink
final question. No, no. Don't listen to him. Keith.
He's doing it.
He did it.
This isn't fair. It's 1 p.m. here. I can't drink
yet. Not without attitude.
I'm drinking coffee.
It's 5 p.m. somewhere.
Right, come on. Let's go. Let's go.
Final question. I'm going to come to each of you individually. And I'm going to start with David because he hasn't said a little bit in a while. Okay? Favorite piece to conduct?
Oh.
Oh.
Wow.
You should have thought about this before because it's on the plan.
Is it? Oh, goodness, is it? Oh, it is.
Literally right at the very bottom.
Oh, it is. Geez.
Okay, you can say one that I've arranged.
There's kind of maybe...
Why would we do that?
I tend to like the longer pieces. I would say I'm kind of torn now between the Final Fantasy VI opera and Kingdom Hearts.
The aria is better.
Yeah.
The aria is part of it.
Because
there's so much in those. It covers a very wide spectrum, and I'm not going to lie, there's an awful lot of chance for me to be visibly animated, and I do enjoy being rather visibly animated at performance time.
I'm gonna ask everybody this question, but during, let's go for the opera. What part is the most difficult to try and keep in time or get through a section of?
There's some operational difficulties with the opera in that there are three vocalists over there behind you, and they're not looking at you. They can't see you, and that's the orchestra. Like, it's even the sound latency penalty I was talking about earlier is like even double because it's got to come from them past you to the audit to the orchestra and back out again, and you're having to try and physically, but visibly control an orchestra to stop them listening to the main theme that they are trying to support so that it keeps together. And that's difficult. And they're bouncing around the room and doing all sorts of well. So people are obviously watching them, and then you're like, would you stop watching them and please watch me so you know when your beat's going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very. That's probably the most difficult part about that.
Yeah. I remember whenever we did it in Low Church, that last gig we did, I'm the first person to sing in that. And there was in that venue, there was like a balcony right at the very back. And I decided my first bit, it's going to be right up there. And just, I remember the first couple of things I sang, I just saw David from behind, like, where is he? And just, I now understand the absolute panic that went through your head.
Yeah, I mean, I will always, for an entry, I will always try and find whoever is performing and do like the choral thing and sing the first line, or at least give some sort of visual indication to say, this is whenever I'm going to give the beat to the orchestra that they are playing and you should be at a similar time. But then you've also got to be a little bit later than visually, so
mm-hmm.
I have to move my left hand and my right hand, and it's hard.
Yes. Moving on.
No, it's Pete, not.
Don't. I can't say anything about that. Trying to be a piano player is not being this one of my strong points, because this hand's doing one thing, this is doing one thing, and I read in alto class, so I'm transposing in two separate directions. But anyway, Keith, why don't you tell us about your favourite piece to conduct?
So I'm kind of the same as David in that, like, I know what I'm going to say, and I'm just going to go ahead and say it. The harder and the longer that it is, the better.
Players would disagree.
Like, because, like you were saying earlier about the Spider-Man piece, and as hard as that is for the actual, well, especially for the string players, because that's just constant triplet quavers. For the conductor, that's just one, two, three, four, da, 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 da. We're at the end. Okay, we'll stop. But there's a couple that I really like that we play. There's the Witcher one that I mentioned earlier, which, because that has the alternating 6-4, 5-4 bars at the start, so you really have to just be focusing on that. And then it goes into, I think, 6-8, maybe? I haven't looked at it for ages, to be honest. And then it goes into, like, like a fast 3-4, so it's one in a bar, essentially. So it's not really normal time signatures, as it were, in terms of, like, you know, just a normal 4-4 or a slow 3-4. But one I also really like is the Chrono Cross, Chrono Trigger one that we do, because that has a lot of changes in the time, but especially that section sort of in the middle, where I'm just going to sing it because I can't describe it. So it's like da 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 blah da 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 ba ba ba.
Oh yeah.
Ba ba da ba da ba da blah ba da ba da ba da blah ba ba da 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 ba da. And then it goes on.
I just wanted to keep going. I was like, it's so beautiful.
I could sing it all. I'll be honest with you.
It's that. It's whenever
that's
whenever you're holding the strings for that. But oh, that's so good. That feels powerful.
So that's the type of thing.
I will say to whoever is conducting that is the, like, I've been trained, just watch the conductor. Like, you probably are always looking at me, looking at you during concerts. That's the one time where it's like, I just, what's the note?
Yeah.
I'm just looking at you. It's like, I can't not look at you because I don't know when that's going
to
be.
Well, that cycles back around to what Robert was saying earlier about how it's the conductor's interpretation of how a piece should be played, because, you know, especially for things like that, when there's a pause, it's how long is a pause? It's not written, you know, this pause, and that, although I should do a movie time code, this pause is 4.786 seconds long, and that's doesn't happen in, well, I mean, not in the kind of stuff we do. So it is going to be, a lot of it's going to be feel, and sometimes we'll be like, oh, the atmosphere of this gig is really good, so let's just milk it a little bit and take it slightly slower than usual.
Yeah.
No, but like that part in particular, you can really let your own interpretation run wild. So like whenever I do it, I've got my very specific way. Like, as you said, Lisa, just sort of watch me and play the notes whenever I wave my hands a bit. But like whenever, say, like David or Robert takes it over, they may have a completely different interpretation of how it should sound, which obviously is, you know, worse than mine, because,
Different. Let's say different.
I have words for you, and we're not going to do that on the podcast because I could rip your conducting in half.
Oh, that's
moving
not
on. Fair. Robert, let's come to you. What would be your favorite piece of conduct? And I think I've got to make a guess in my head, and I'm hoping I'm right.
Well, you're going to think it's Zelda.
Yes.
No, it's not.
Which one are you? Wait. Okay. Really? As much as I love that piece, it's a pain in the butt. It's annoying to conduct because it's just a three,
yeah.
And no one ever gets the pickup right. No, I was going to say, my favorite piece is basically anything that shakes the walls.
Okay, because my guess was...
Hold on, I'm not done yet. I'm not done.
Oh, no, let her guess. Come on, I want to hear.
Guess.
God, it's like a bunch of drunk lords over there. Good lord.
I need more drunk.
No, you don't.
All right, go ahead. Last thing you needed.
I was going to guess that it was Pokemon Gotta Catch 'Em All.
Now, see, that's a really fun one. And the reason why is because as soon as you get going, you don't have to do anything. Especially yeah. if there's a drum kit going in the back. Because the only part where you actually have to do anything is during the bridge, during the eighth notes and the strings, just to make sure it doesn't slow down. That's all you have to do.
Oh, no, you have to point to the guitar player. That's very important.
Yeah, and you have to get... Yeah, and you have to give the guitar player
and it has to be a very dramatic point.
Oh yeah, it's that guy.
Yeah.
I do it differently. I give it a little bit more power. But when I started playing organ, the reason I wanted to do it was for the power. I wanted to play an instrument.
Are we going to make the powerful organ joke, or are we just going to go past that?
I was going to be very silent.
Keith, shut up.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Keith, just shut up.
Let Robert finish.
Because I wanted to play an instrument that had the power to shake the building.
Fair.
And so that's kind of come over into my conducting as well. I like the pieces that just, like, you know, the whole building just...
Yeah.
Underneath it, you know? So, like... anything from, like, League of Legends, World of Warcraft, like, those big, massive pieces with the giant drums and the crazy loud, crazy low brass. Like, that kind of stuff is what excites me the most. Like, I remember doing Summoner's Call. No. The Challengers? No. Yeah, the Challengers from League of Legends at... in Cork at UCC and having those two ringer trombone players in that piece.
Remember that gig.
Do you say you don't remember
that
gig?
No, I said now I remember. I know exactly the bit that you're talking about.
First
because
piece.
We had two very very good very very confident very very competent as well as confident trombone players and that was great.
Your dad wasn't there for that one, wasn't he?
He was unable to attend, and we wish him all the best for the future.
We also had a ringer trumpet player there, too. He was also pretty...
Ringer pretty or assistant?
Whatever.
Well, I mean, yeah, he played all the bits I couldn't, so, like, fair play to him.
He was good.
He was lovely, actually. He was a very nice man.
I remember him.
Me and his mother are friends on Facebook still. Like, he's great. His mom is a nice, very nice woman.
There's your bride for your Northern Irish pass.
She's that's not going to get him into Northern Ireland. This is if he's in Cork.
Yeah, sure.
In World of Warcraft, isn't there like a really dramatic speed change somewhere in the middle of that piece? Or is it a key change? I can't remember. I haven't played it in so long.
There is a very massive time signature change.
That's what it
because
is.
Because at the beginning, it's like, I want to say 12:08 at the beginning. And then there's a huge... There's supposed to be a really big, like, timpani roll, bass drum roll into, it goes back into 12:08.
Does it not go into 5:4? Or 7:4? 7:4.
There is a 7:4 bit.
Yeah,
in there.
Like, all of the best songs of war are in 7:4.
Right, and that's because they have the
4-3
feel to it.
Yeah.
It's the way that they place the drums and the downbeat within them that cause it to have that very typical World of Warcraft sound.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
So anything like that, like, yeah, you can tell because I like get into like a power stance and just all the conducting comes from, yeah, the gut instead of like up here. It's just, and that's, and honestly, David, you'll know this, that's the reason why I made us get a podium.
Yeah.
That is the reason. Not because you guys are short. It's because I want to be able to use the full breadth of like conducting space, which you can't do if you're standing on the floor.
Okay, no, legit, because me and Keith are actually quite short.
I also, you guys are really short.
Like, we are not very but tall also, people.
But also, I want it to be taller because after those 2 weeks of shows that we did last August, my shoulders were killing me.
Yeah.
So it's just like, I wanted to be taller, but also, yeah, you guys needed it too.
Welcome to my life.
slightly selfish reasons.
Welcome to the Short Boy, yeah, podcast.
Short Boy.
I don't know what that's like. I'm 6'3".
Size doesn't matter. And we've come full circle.
Yes, on that note, thank you very much, the conducting boys, for joining me. I have one final thing I need you to do for me.
Nope.
I need you to whip out your batons.
It's in front of everyone. Okay, so mine's in the orchestra kit.
You want one of mine?
I mean, I could go. Have you a spare one? That'll be handy. I really love your baton because mine is literally buried in the box.
Do you want to?
If you can see, Keith, there's a box over there with a white thing sticking out of it. Over in the corner, that's the orchestra music.
Is this
music.
The YouTube exclusive?
This is the YouTube exclusive.
I'm very sorry to all the audio listeners.
Oh, no, don't. I'll take one of yours because, like, you're not getting it out of there. That's.
I'm too wine drunk to do that.
I mean, I think you need a degree in archaeology at this point.
I think Keith is using the Mollard baton case over there. That's very nice, yes.
Yes.
So
went to order.
Do you want the crappy see-through one or the actual one you can see on the video?
The actual one you can see.
Oh,
the video.
Okay.
I actually went to buy a Mollard baton at the start of lockdown.
My lovely case.
But
hello.
It was closed due to COVID, and then orchestra hasn't been playing, and it's broken my heart.
Well, this is my purple-headed stick.
Oh, Jesus.
My final thing I'm going to ask is the baton more important than just using your hand?
No.
No.
Nope.
It's essentially a twig.
They're totally invalid. Totally invalid.
You could honestly go to the park, pick up a twig, and that's...
That is good enough. Yeah. Because it's... all. I mean, the baton is for visibility from a distance, really.
Is it just to make you feel like you're making magic, like it's a wand?
I actually feel a lot more comfortable without a baton at all. Because aside from Robert's personal lessons, I've never been taught how to properly use one.
And actually, I prefer to not use a baton either. I've gotten more comfortable without one.
Why do you even have them still around?
Because people at the very back can't see without a white thing.
That's exactly why. Because the orchestra keeps getting bigger.
Yeah.
And so you need one. Yeah. But you'll see me during soft parts or more lyrical music, I'll drop it. I won't use it anymore.
And it's funny actually because you get different sizes of baton as well. So you'll get quite short ones, which are more for like chamber choirs and stuff in smaller groups where you don't need the length of visibility.
Well, okay, so here are two.
Broadly speaking, not like specifically, because there is also a preference of length and counterweights.
There is like a pretty significant difference in those.
Yeah, these are the two that I used through college. And the big difference is that this one... as I'm holding it up for people who are on the podcast, this one's a lot heavier than this one. And it's also longer by probably about an inch. And it's a completely different material. This one's fully wood. This one is not fiberglass, but it's some sort of composite material. And there is just a huge difference in control and... huge difference in control and the drag of the baton and all of this. Like, there's just, your stick can do so much for your conducting, but it can also hamper you so much.
Well, that's so, I just genuinely thought like you could do it with a pencil, like.
Oh, you could.
Oh, you can.
I have done in the orchestra before when I definitely didn't forget my baton. I love how this one that you've given me, Keith, says King David on it.
That was the first one I ever got. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Those are the worst. That is a terrible baton.
Yeah, that was the first one I ever got. And I got it free from the band that I was conducting at the time.
Is that the one with the cork handle?
Oh, of course.
Yeah, no, those are terrible.
Yeah, no, I got this one.
Yeah, the Mollard Lanceos are actually quite interesting because of the center point is behind, like in the grip, in the handle itself.
You mean the tang?
The tang. Yeah. Okay, Mr. American, I know how to do knives. But yes,
balanced as all the.
Yeah, but it's balanced further back from the point, the exact point where the stick bit starts.
Yeah,
that's like actually really interesting because that's going to cause that's going to cause the tip of the baton to rise.
For me, I don't know about you, Keith, but it makes the tip very, very light.
I mean, yeah, I haven't conducted for about 9 months at this stage, so I'm, yeah, sure, why not?
No, and it's
the different. The heavier one I have, the grip, the fulcrum, or not the fulcrum, that's the grip, the tang is a little bit forward, and the tip is heavier, and that causes a much more, everything turns into legato, because you're dragging the tip around.
This is a very interesting topic for somebody who knows nothing about this.
But this is the kind of detail. These are the things that you don't really think that you need to think about until you actually start conducting and you start using the tools.
This has been the most heated discussion of the night. Is
Let me put it this way: if there's anything that you need to take away from any baton conversation, is that your baton needs to be balanced.
Yeah.
And it needs to be weighted, which is why mollards are really good for like a low-priced balanced baton.
Low-priced? I'm sorry, yeah. Have you a trust fund?
How much are mollards? They should be like, what, $30?
I think this one was more expensive. I mean, I got it for Christmas, so I didn't have to pay for it. Thank you, parents, yet again.
How much are you paying for a baton?
Well, it's also, they also charge, I think it's like $30 to $50 international shipping to us.
Oh.
There's different series.
You can get a Mollard P-Series baton on guitarcenter.com for $32.
Guitar Center, sorry, some of us are too
European.
Anybody
just to say. Looking for,
This podcast is not sponsored by Guitar Center, but we're looking for the sponsors, please, and thank you.
I am definitely looking. I would love some more Music Man basses, if they could make their way over here. So it's I am on their website. It's $70 plus shipping. I'm probably probably plus tax because like that's the American for the Lanceo
for
series.
Who?
Mollard for the Lanceo ones, so the fancy ones. Although they do a glow in the dark color one that I also want to get for the crack.
Don't do it.
Stop me.
I will say I've got two batons from Pagu in Buffalo, New York. And those, I think, cost about $80 each. Those are the heavy ones. And then the one I use constantly now is from Guy Lake. And I actually didn't pay anything for that because what had happened was... So his batons are about $40 or $50. But what had happened was somebody ordered it through the conducting classes at Cal State. And they never picked it up. So like we would order in bulk, like... Place your order of whatever you want with them and you get a discount and they all get shipped to the school and then, you know, they get handed out in class. Well, no one picked this one up and it turned out to be the perfect length and the color that I wanted. And so my conducting professor's like, here, try this one because we were having issues with the heavier batons I was using. And he's like, here, try this. And he's like, okay, that one's yours because no one picked it up and I've had it in my office for a year. So there you go.
I have just checked, and Emer Noon is a Pagu artist, it looks like, so you definitely, that's not why you bought that.
No, that's not why I bought this one at all. Not her baton.
Very, very expensive note, where the two boys who are sitting in the room together poured themselves another glass of wine. I'm going to cut this off before they write themselves off. So thank you very much for joining me.
Honestly,
guys.
We're too late
thank
for that.
You.
That's the most amazing intro I've ever heard.
Thank you to anybody who tuned in to this episode. Hopefully you learned something. Hopefully you're more interested in conducting. I know I am. And we shall see you on the next episode of Sidestage with the IVGO. Do you just want to conduct us out?
You may want to just re-record that whole outro section. Yeah. Because we're blasting all over the end of it.
I don't care at this point.
Goodbye.
See you later, guys.
And copy.